You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Grand Canyon University makes earning your degree possible with over 130 academic programs for traditional campus students, with more than 80 bachelor's programs offered online. GCU provides you with the personal support you need, from complimentary unofficial transcript evaluations within 24 business hours to scholarships, academic support, and your GCU graduation team, led by your own university counselor. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 58 of Take a Bow. I'm your host, Eli Chokash, and we have not had an episode come out on the first of the month in quite some time. So what we're going to do is, I couldn't think of a better way to start off the month in bringing back the more intimate episodes that Cindy and I used to do when we were doing the podcast together. And we would sometimes just, like, you know, meet on ourselves and talk about theater and talk about our journeys and everything like that. So this time we're gonna switch it up and we're gonna do it with my siblings, which has kind of been requested by a lot of listeners. So I'm very excited to see how this goes today. And I'm very, very excited to be with you all this week because Broadway is officially reopened. And come on, I mean, Broadway is open. It's been a year and a half plus, and Broadway's open, and the city is reopening, and marquees are going up to all these new shows. It's amazing. I'm about to have my first musical theater audition in about a year and a half to 2 years, and I couldn't be more excited. So everything's coming back. It's just every week and every day really just continues to get more exciting as far as Broadway's return and everything like that, and the world kind of returning back to normal. But it's been great. And let's talk about what's going on. Because Broadway is reopened, let's talk about Bruce Springsteen. You knew I had to talk about it this week. You know, it's Bruce Springsteen. It's the only show on Broadway right now. So let's talk about it. Bruce Springsteen officially opened on June 26th. And it marked Broadway's return. And it was the first Broadway show to return, Springsteen on Broadway. And it's been all the rage up here now. It's the only show that you can see. It's kind of like the only live show that you can see. So very exciting there. And I assume that that's why it's all the rage up here. And it's just very exciting. And they're saying that this production of it is even better than the one that originally opened on Broadway a few years ago and was a limited run and shut down. They're saying that this show was similar to the original incarnation of it, but there's a lot of new additions and new phrases and everything like that. It was really cool. A bunch of friends of mine have seen it. Laura Hayward, a previous Take a Bow guest, came to see it on opening night. And of course, this is not your typical Broadway show, so they're not in previews, so it's opened already. It's just him on a stage singing his heart out. And it's amazing. So all of these reviews it's getting rave reviews. It's saying that this is better than the first version. If you love Springsteen, if you love live music, check it out. It's wonderful to see everyone come together again. He makes references to the pandemic and saying how lucky and thankful we all are to be here and that it could have been a lot worse. And he keeps it very light and heartfelt and leaves you really just uplifted leaving the show. And he says there has been people from San Francisco and Phoenix and Asbury Park and New York. And, you know, he names all of these little states and he hears, you know, people scream in the audience, like, woohoo, cheering from like my hometown and everything. And it's like wonderful. It's wonderful to see everyone coming back together. It's wonderful to see tourists coming to New York and experiencing the magic once again. And it's just really, it's really, really great to hear. And it's something that's been long overdue. And I just could not be happier that we are here. And speaking of being here, there's trying to bring a musical here to New York. And it's not a musical. It's more of an opera. And it's, interestingly enough, going to be about Harvey Weinstein's trials. Yes, that is right. They are currently working on an opera-styled show titled The Trial of Harvey Weinstein, an opera. And it's going to be, right now it's going to be in Northern Ireland, but the director really, really wants to bring it to New York and says that this is like a natural home. New York City would be a natural home for this wonderful show and story that they're trying to tell. And there will be no actor in the Weinstein role. Harvey Weinstein will be referenced, but he will not have a part. And so he will not have anything against that. The writer and director, Connor Mitchell, wrote the music, and he will be taking the libretto directly from the six women who testified against Weinstein during these New York City trials in 2020. So it's very interesting. I mean, it was bound to happen soon enough. We all assumed that it would be a movie or a musical or some sort. But this will be focusing just on the trials and, will not be focusing on all of the stories and everything like that. It'll be more of the testimonies and everything like that. And it'll be an opera and, it's going to be a story to be told. That's for sure. And, that'll be very exciting. It's in the early stages. So I say this, and if it's not here on Broadway or somewhere in New York in the next like 2 to 3 years, it's probably not going to happen. Probably going to happen way, way, way down the line. And it'll hopefully be in New York and be getting some, in educating other audience members who may not know the story and, share it in such a beautiful, operatic way. So that's very interesting. That caught the attention of my eyes. Of course, he was the producer of Finding Neverland. So whenever I see his name in the headlines, I'm like, oh boy, I know that name. And, it catches my attention. The Trial of Harvey Weinstein, an opera, has hopes to bring it to New York. So keep an eye out for that. And speaking of shows coming to New York or reopening, I guess you could say, Harry Potter is reopening November 16th on Broadway. However, it is only going to be reopening as a one-part show. So for those of you who've seen Harry Potter, what they're doing is so mean, because literally I saw the whole show in a day and I had 2.5 hours between my shows and I was going crazy. So I cannot imagine going like weeks or months or whatever, maybe a year, whatever their plan is in reopening to see part two. It's very interesting that they're going this route. I figured there would be something unique going on with this. So Harry Potter, November 16th as a one part. So those of you who have not seen Harry Potter, I don't know if I would go see it yet. Maybe you'll wait till you're closer to the part two reopening, or wait till they're like doing the both part one and part two. I don't know. That one part is so tricky. Unless you've read the books and you like haven't seen it and you know what's happening, maybe that's a little different. But I never read that book because I knew it was going to be a play and I knew that they were going to bring it to Broadway and I wanted to see it on the stage. So I didn't really know what was going to happen in the book, and I'm glad I did not go that route because the stage version was just visually incredible, and both visually and artistically, and it was just written amazingly, and it's wonderful. I loved that show. And another show, Neil Simon's Plaza Suite, will begin previews on February 25th, 2022, and it will be opening the following month in March 28th. 2022. So yeah, great stuff happening. I announced last week that Chicken and Biscuits show that's coming. That'll be before both of those, actually, on September 23rd and opening October 10th. A little shorter previews and opening, but it'll be equally amazing and very impressive and very historic, that show. If you missed that from last week, go check that out. It's at the beginning of the episode, so you won't have to listen to too much again. And yeah, I'm very excited for that one too. So as I said, this is going to be an intimate episode, so you're going to be hearing a lot more of me today, so I'm going to keep these intro and outro short, and we will turn it over to the interview right after we do our drama dictionary section. So this week's drama dictionary word of the week is going to be the difference between a standby, an understudy, an alternate, and a swing. We will start out with understudy, as that's the more universal and basic term that we should all kind of be familiar with. So an understudy is someone in the cast who is the quote-unquote backup for the main person who goes on every other show. And an understudy will always be backstage and always be ready to go. Usually, understudies will only cover one to two roles so that they're not listed as a swing. And an understudy will kind of just be ready whenever they usually don't have a role in the show otherwise, except to be the understudy for that particular role. An alternate is someone who is an understudy, but they are also guaranteed shows. So they're at least guaranteed either a couple shows a week or they're a couple shows a month, on vacation days, whatever it may be. That can be, you can be considered as an alternate. Now, a swing will do a whole bunch of roles. So at least like four plus roles, I would assume, would be the limit to label yourself as a swing. So that's what a swing is. And then we also have standby. And what a standby is they will not be any other role other than standby for usually the main character. So like there's and it's very rare that this is an actual thing, this standby. It's usually in roles where you have like an alphabet and it's vocally demanding and it's craziness and it's all these things, and doing it 8 shows a week is insane. They do it for Dear Evan Hansen as well, and they will literally do nothing else except standby for that one role. And just to be sure that that one person is safe. And because there's understudies who cover a couple roles and that's about it, and they're going to be standing by for their roles, but they also have other roles to worry about. So if they go on, they have to focus on those roles first. And a standby is literally, they only have one role they have to worry about, and they're the first to go on before the understudy, and they're just there to make sure there's insurance so that the show can go on. And those are only for those very, very demanding roles in a show. So that's the difference between those four. I hope that was helpful. If I need to elaborate, I absolutely will. You all know how to contact me. It's in the end of the episode if you do not. So those are the difference. I hope that was helpful. And I know there's a lot of confusion about that. People have messaged me about it, so I'm clearing it up today, and I hope that's helpful for you all. So with that being said, let's turn it over to my siblings, and we're going to talk about what it takes to really take a bow. I'm very excited for this episode, so everyone, welcome my siblings, Tessie and Zach Tokash. So this week, we have my siblings on the show. It's the first live interview of Take a Bow, and I couldn't be more exciting. It's very fitting that it's with these two people who are both very special to me and very special to the process of Take a Bow. So everyone, welcome to the show, Tessie Tokash and Zach Tokash. Thank you guys for joining this week.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, excited and
let's talk, I guess, from the beginning. Let's talk about home and what it was like and why we kind of got started in the theater and the drastic change that it was for us when we got there. So do you want to take it, Tezzy, since you kind of started this whole thing?
I will try and make it as quick as possible without details. So I was about 11 years old, and I was sifting through the newspaper, and I found this ad in the newspaper that Chitty Chitty Bang Bang with Dick Van Dyke, well, not with him, but I remember watching and being obsessed with that film. And I saw that they were looking for 5 local children, and there was auditions at the Pittsburgh CLO, which none of us have ever heard before. But I showed my mom, and I was just like, hey, this looks awesome. Like, I just want to go audition. I was also doing dance, so I was just like, it would be like good experience as well and get me, you know, some practice with dancing and my onstage presence. So my mom said no the first like 5 times I asked, and then I begged and begged and begged. And after, you know, hiding it under a pillow and hiding it everywhere in the house and putting it on the fridge, she kind of was just like, all right, let's just go. It's good little experience for you.
This was the morning of that she was kind of like, all right, I'll take you.
And I, like, we were so excited to get an outfit together and everything. I showed up in all camo. My hair was down. One was braided to the side. And I showed up to the audition. Everybody's wearing jazz shoes and dance shoes and dance outfits. And yeah, I'm the only one wearing all camo. And I showed up and they were like taking numbers. And I was so confused. I didn't know what was happening. But yeah, I, sang my song and they cut me basically. They're just like, okay, see you guys. I saw people going after for, dance numbers and everything. And I was just like, you know, it was so much fun. I was really happy. And then 2 weeks later, we got a call. My mom did. I was in one of my dance lessons and I just got done doing a back handspring and I accidentally like kicked like somebody. And it was my mom. She came in, she was just like, you got the part. You're 1 of 5. And I was just like, I totally forgot about the audition, but this is awesome. And we went in a couple weeks later. I learned the show in one day. Me and these 4 other kids, among them was Joe.
Joe Serafini, yeah. Who's been on the show.
Yeah, and yeah, that's kind of how we met. He was one of the kids that showed up in dance shoes and a dance outfit. They're professional.
Headshot
and everything. I didn't even know
what that was at that point.
Didn't have any of that. It was a great experience.
Yeah, and then we learned a lot from Joe and other people in his cast, or in his her family. Cast and her his family. And we talked about that a little bit on the episode with him, but he's the one who kind of really started it all as well, and like the next level of it for us. And now, and then we all 3 got into the CLO in Pittsburgh, which we've talked about a lot on here. And that's kind of like an academy that you can go and you can learn all of your, you can, you know, I guess expand on your creative ability and talents and explore like all of that for you. Take different classes, all the lessons and everything, and really learn the fundamentals of the performing art industry. So then, we were still living in West Virginia, and we would go to Pittsburgh we would travel there to do all of this. And Tessie was in The Cat in the Hat. Zach was in Camp Rock. Shane Gray, not a big deal. With Justin Bieber hair flip and everything. It was great. And, yeah, and then I was in the Jungle Book, and we were all 3 doing summer camps at CLO, and then all of a sudden these 2 got into mini stars, and like their careers were like taking off in Pittsburgh, and I was just like, I really want to do it.
Well, at the time, yours was too, because you had you were Tiny Tim.
Right.
Because I remember I auditioned for that, and that was the first one that I didn't get, and I was just like, oh, okay. And then mini stars happened, and I was just like, oh, great, this is awesome.
Yeah, it wasn't for a while that especially I got into it. Like, it was once we saw Tessie and he said that, I think I want to give that a shot and do it. And I was just like, people don't do that. Guys don't do that in West Virginia. You don't go and do musical theater. And it was it didn't happen for a while that I was like, oh wow, this is actually a really cool and fun way to express yourself and a really just outlet. And
yeah, I was gonna say, like, it's not even like expressing, it's just like an outlet to just release everything that you want to release. And there's so much, especially like back home, I remember the tension I would feel, that I would be so excited to drive 45 minutes. I didn't care how long it took. I'd be so excited to drive up there and say hi to like basically a no one that you saw in Weirton was in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, exactly. It was a really cool experience for us because, like, you know, where we're from, it's a very small town and everyone knows everyone. So coming into this new town and coming into Pittsburgh, doing things that we've never really done before and meeting all these new people, I think that was just another element that just made it so much enjoyable for us and made it so intriguing to us and pulled us in.
Yeah, and theaters like really helped me, like, not like reinvent myself, but like add on to my character. Like, right. Back in West Virginia, you were, you know, a copy and paste. Like, everybody kind of knew. And if you were off a beat in a day, people would be like, talk about it. Like, oh, do you see, like, this person was off today, or this person at church was off today? Like,
yeah.
But, like, when you would go to Pittsburgh or anything, like, you could express or even try something new. Like, I remember I wanted to try a different, like, I cut my hair short to be an Oliver. Like, and I remember people, when I would go to CLO, people were just like, oh my gosh, your hair is great. And, you know, people were back home saying the same thing as well, but like also at the same time, like, you know, people
talking about people you talk, behind your back, talk. You know, like,
yeah. And you, yeah. And so that was something new too.
And you just developed like a whole new family after a time. And you were like, so excited to see that family. And it was just completely different from the normal, not the normal, the everyday cycle of being in West Virginia and the like Groundhog Day.
Yeah, exactly.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSMusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Yeah, people from Pittsburgh, they were driving like 10 minutes back to their home, but we were driving 45 minutes back, but it would 45 minutes up and 45 minutes back, we would be exhausted, but it'd kind of be like so worth it. Like we every week we look forward to it.
Yeah, and so this is very brief and like kind of short. We can go on for days. But so then, as we mentioned, you guys, we were all kind of, our careers started to, we started to have like some sort of career in the theater industry, all three of us really. And in Pittsburgh, we were all represented by the talent group in Pittsburgh. We were doing like voiceovers for gas stations and all these things, like radio.
I was gonna say, Zach was a model
for Frankenstein at Rite Aid.
So excited to hear that my modeling career was taking off, because at that time I was a 5'2", 200-pound.
That's right.
Yeah, wait, real
there
quick.
There is nothing wrong with that.
Wait, real quick, tell your story on that.
My mom got a call, said, is your son allergic to
latex?
And at that time I had no idea what latex even was. And I was like, I'm getting my modeling career is taken off. Look at me. I can't wait to go to school.
And he didn't
kids.
Know that he was going to be Frankenstein.
I had no idea. It was for the Halloween edition of Rite Aid. And that I was go through 6 hours of makeup and everything to them put all this stuff on my face, and then 8 hours to take it off and then be plastered as Frankenstein across the country. But yeah.
Can I put your picture in?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So yes. Yeah, so we were all kind of doing our own things and, you know, doing it together as like a family, because we didn't really know how else to do it. And then we had a difficult decision that came upon us when I had my first audition in New York and that was for the tour of Mary Poppins. And that was like the first time that we had to like make a decision to not do it as like a family and like not, you know, have each other there for us all the time. And we were going to be away and whatnot. So Zach, you can touch on this first. Cause you, I remember the decision process. We all, the five of us and even our grandparents were like all sitting at our dining room table. And we were all like, okay, here's the situation. Eli got a role and he's going to have to leave for 6 months. We're not sure how we're going to be able to do it. You know, my both parents were working and everything like that. And
yeah, if you were going to take it,
right.
Yeah, that's true. Be,
yeah. So like, we were like, this is it. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So how do we make this work? How do we make it so that he can do it? Right. And the thing was, if, you know, the two of them were really the decision makers, Zach and Tessie, because they weren't going to have their sibling, they weren't going to have a parent, they were going to have to figure out how to make it work. And they were really the deciding factors. And I remember Zach was the one who was really like, you guys would be great. Zach's very opinionated, but in the best ways. So he was like, he was not shy in throwing his opinion around. So he's going, you can, you have to make it work. You got to let him go. So Zach, touch on that and kind of what that experience was like.
Yeah, before that, I mean, I don't know how much, I don't think he has the first, the process of getting to the audition first of everybody was like, oh, there's midnight buses. And yeah, like we eventually found Megabus, fell in love with Megabus. Not fell in love, but it was the, it was the easiest.
Most affordable.
Yeah, affordable, accessible. And
$1 ride.
Just way that we could get to see the family throughout all of this. But the first time we ever went to New York City, my mom told us she found the Megabus, and we pulled up to this Asian bus line in, I have no idea where, in PA. And then it dropped us off in Chinatown. We woke up, and we saw Chinese billboards and Chinese writing like all over the walls, and we're like, oh my god, we're not, I didn't think I was in the USA anymore.
Well, okay, so that was for my first time, our first time in New York, where we were seeing agents
and
everything like that.
With us for,
so Papa, we drove up, you, me, my mom, and Papa.
Yes.
We drove up and we stayed at like a hotel, and then we actually saw Mary Poppins the day before. But yes, that was another story of our first time in New York where we were visiting agents, and those are eventually an agent brought us all on. Right. And once again, like my parents were like, oh, if you want him, sign the other two too. Very Joe bro. You know? Yeah. So,
we all got agents.
Yeah. So we all got agents. And then my first audition, we made it work. And then, yeah,
But so, yeah, that came to us, and I don't know, I guess just seeing the way that my family has always been, and I mean, not that it was anything to the scale of figuring out, but we've just always made it work and found a way to power through and to just figure it out how we can all be the happiest and also exceeding and doing the best for each person. And when this came, when this was put on the table that Eli got a role for Mary Poppins, Broadway touring company. I mean, there was just no way that, like, this is something not that we had been working for. And like, this was like, cause like, it's still at that time in my life, like I didn't realize like, oh, like end goal is Broadway. Like that's what
right.
You work for.
We didn't even know that was like what it was.
Yeah.
Like,
this was
thing.
Just something that you did for fun and whatever. And just the fact that you now had the opportunity to not do it at the CLO, because like, oh, it was CLO, but now you can tour it and be it 100
see the world. Yeah, it was just an
world.
Opportunity that you couldn't really pass on.
You couldn't pass on. So yeah, I am very opinionated and will let my opinion be heard, especially in my family. But yeah, there was no way in my head that we could pass on this, because it's opportunity that doesn't come often. And especially I've seen how rare it does happen, and the fact that it did happen to us in little town West Virginia was just, we couldn't pass it up.
It was also like, oh, what's 6 months,
you know?
We'll be fine.
Never thought it'd be 8-9 years.
Yeah, after being exposed to theater though, like we realized, being up in Pittsburgh, we saw how many auditions these kids would go through and be like, no, so for you to get it, like, a touring even. First of all, touring was completely new to us because we were like, okay, local theater. Okay, there's this and that and MT Tech or MT Stars and everything. And then we saw, I mean, I remember Logan Rowland getting the tour of
Adam's Family.
Adam's Family. And we thought, Rachel Maracknow, we thought they were like huge. We were like, oh my God, that's touring. Like, what is that? I remember researching it and being like, oh wow, this is huge. And then you getting that, we were like, you can't pass this up. Are you kidding? Like, people work their whole lives to get like just a touring production.
Yeah, people have been busting their butt for since they were 3 years old to get an opportunity to even audition for something like that, let alone be handed, not handed, but be given the chance to be a part of it.
That's the thing too. Like, people work at their talents their entire lives. So you have this like raw thing that like people saw and were just like, yeah, we need you. Cause that was a huge thing that, and you know this, why you got a lot of things, because you were so raw and people would be like, you know, oh, we can take you and we can like mold you into our own character or whatever. So a lot of people like are trained to do that. Like, you're great and everything, but like, you weren't really trained.
Yeah, we can edit that out. That's not part of the story.
And it definitely didn't, it wasn't bad that you were the like cutest 7-8 year old in the world, but
yeah. Okay. anyways, so then we have to say goodbye for the first time ever, and like saying goodbye, they say it would get easier as it went, but in my opinion, I feel like it got harder every time we said goodbye, because it seemed like every time we said goodbye, we would go longer without seeing each other. Mm-hmm. So like, then there was that phase that we didn't know that we'd have to go through.
Yeah, that I'm glad you said that, because I feel, when people are, when you do something so often, and like everybody says, it gets easier, and especially like that, and like, not that we didn't think we were not going to see each other again, but like saying goodbye, like especially with this whole process, has like scarred me,
right?
Like, saying goodbye to people, and it's just always, it's still like, it gets harder every time, no matter who it is. And I don't know, I just always want it to be like, not like a grand big thing, but like, I want to have that moment and like have that time to like say goodbye and enjoy the time, like,
right
before it does happen.
It's also interesting. You brought up the other day, like, you were like, oh, well, we recently moved, and we were like, oh, well, like, you were saying that you weren't attached. Like, you don't allow yourself to get like attached to places anymore, like our homes technically, because you know, like, something's gonna happen, we're gonna have to say goodbye, and you don't want that emotion. So that was an interesting thing too.
Yeah, that's our, because I mean, our home at 107 Powers Road was, I mean, nobody,
why are you giving the address?
Yeah, no, because like, that's how I like, that's how I have it in my head now. Like, I mean, look it up, stock bus, like, whatever, I don't care.
Yeah, we don't live there anymore. It's okay. Our picture is still on the Google Maps, but it's okay. We don't live there anymore.
But no, ever since we moved out of that house, and you kind of saw that, you knew that this was going to be a permanent thing, and that we were going to end up coming to New York and everything, like, after, I mean, that wasn't at first, that was after 2-3 years of this. And moving to our next house, which we downsized into a smaller house, because at that time Tessie was going to college soon, so it was just going to be my mom and I at home. It's terrible to say, but like, I just have like cut that part of myself off of like growing an emotional attachment to
a living space.
Yeah, a living space or material, not materialistic things, but like that sort of, just that sort of thing and environment, because I mean, in my head, it's just kind of like, I know I sound like the white mom in the bathroom sign, but it's like, home isn't the home. Oh, like, the home is where your family is, type of thing, and like the people that you're with. But yeah,
white woman's Instagram.
Yeah, white woman's Instagram.
So then we started saying bye, and then, you know, this continued to grow, and we had to ultimately move. And this was actually a question
I wanted to ask.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
Real quick, just super quickly. For me, during the Mary Poppins process, it actually did, contrary to everybody else, it got easier for me, only because I was the only one that didn't really venture out on tour with you guys. Because you went a lot on tour, and you went to Alaska and everything, so like, you know, talk about growing attachment to places. Like, you went a lot of places with them, like, mm-hmm. with the family, with, what was it, you and dad, mostly?
Yeah, constantly changing.
Me and mom, mostly, at the time.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Constantly changing an environment, yeah. not having to get used yeah. to it.
So
yeah.
that was rough, but
Can't relate.
Yeah, you were used to, like, hop, skipping everywhere.
No, but... I'm saying I would get attached, and I still do.
Oh, yeah.
I allow myself to get attached. It's
no,
terrible.
Yeah, and that, it made it easier for me, because I wasn't really experiencing that. I was getting ready to go to college, and... experience my own new kind of home, if you'd say so.
Right.
I'm gonna say that.
So then this is a Patreon question, as I was alluding to before. You know, so this thing continues to grow. We're seeing each other for longer. We're going without seeing each other for a longer period of time. And then this was a question submitted, and they want to know what it was like having your brother and a parent gone for so long, and how cool would it be when you were finally able to visit and also, like, see him on stage and see, like, why you're kind of doing this.
Take that away. That's
yeah.
You.
yeah, I'll touch on this, because, I mean, to this day, I always say it's one of the hardest things that our family's gone through, and it definitely took a toll on our family. Like, I don't know, and I don't want to say it like, oh, whatever, but, like, no part of this was easy.
Yeah.
Like, but we knew that there was a dream, and that there was the opportunity, and again, like, in my head, yeah, is it going to suck for the 5 years, 6 years, whatever it was going to be? Yeah, but at the end of it, like, we were growing up, we were going to end up moving to the city, and... we are all going to have better lives because of it, and have more opportunity, not only for Eli, but for Tessie now with editing and the internships that she's been able to have and currently doing.
And then
a job that she's going to start soon. And for me, just, I mean, my dad had always, like, we grew up saying, like, don't be, everybody in Weirton's a doctor, lawyer, pharmacist, whatever. And not that I'm not bashing on any of those professions
right.
at all, because those are all very respectful professions, but there's not your arts and management and business and to the level that New York City has. And I'm not saying that no other place.
There's just not as many opportunities. I mean, to be
absolutely.
Fair.
You hit the nail on the head, though. I have a documentary. I did it for my capstone, but Zach hit the nail on the head of, like, art culture back home.
Yeah.
If you want to repeat what you said in that documentary, because it's so true, about, like, The Little Mermaid having the budget that
they
had.
Oh, yeah.
And,
like,
you literally go to...
yeah, that I ended up doing... Tessie and I were in our high school drama programs and everything, and the budgets for our show, I mean, were... You were praying to get, like, $150 budget so that... you could get costumes and stuff like that. And most of it, the drama teacher was paying for it, because... he loved the arts and saw that, and
that was the thing. Like, that just goes to show you how underrepresented
yeah.
it is in the town that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like,
so
most of the budget,
like,
especially for local theaters, are donations. So those are people's families, like, willing to help out, but, like, no one wants to support the arts. They're going to support the church, and they're going to support the sports teams and all
mm-hmm.
that. So, like, that's, it's very interesting to see the representation that West Virginia has, and now that we, like, grew up there, and now we are, like, out of that, and now we're kind of all pursuing passion and careers in the
yeah.
arts.
And when I think about it, like, in high school, like, some of the best memories was from that, like, $90 budget.
Right.
Theater
yeah.
club.
So, yeah, it was very hard. And, I mean, it took a toll on the family. And a lot of us had to step up, and some of us more than others. And some of us took it harder than others. And just overall, I mean, I'd go back and do it all over again, and it would not change a thing, because here we are now and everything. But yeah, it was hard, and because growing up, like, it was always me, my dad, and Eli going to a Penguin game, going to hockey practice, whatever. We had our blue Kia was designated that it was our Penguins car, and we got in it to go to.
Yeah, it's not like our hockey bag, so
yeah,
like, that was like our hockey.
And we just always, but yeah, so it was hard, and the dynamics definitely changed and continued to change over the years, but. it wasn't until like throughout this whole thing, and even when I was on tour with Eli during Mary Poppins and everything, I still didn't fully understand everything and the aspect of how big it was, because in my head, yeah, again, it was touring, like, this was just another step of like, yeah, it's so cool that you can do this, and absolutely, no, we're not going to pass it up. But I never understood the greater outlook on it until I saw him on his opening night in Pippin, and just like actually like taking a step back and looking at like all of the people who have paid hundreds of dollars, just completely random people, and the people who are standing outside at the stage door after wanting to sign pictures, and how much it means to them, and how big of a community, and just how it touches each person differently. And like to see that that's my little brother up there doing that and like making people feel that way was just such a surreal moment. And that was definitely a moment that I'll never forget. And finally understood a lot more of the level that he was on and what it meant to people.
Ow. Ooh, that was pretty.
Yeah, cool. And honestly, touching on that, I feel like we were, well, shout out to Dan Brenner, first of all, for submitting that question for us. But also, like, I want to touch on what you said, like, that was such, what you said, like, makes so much sense, because, like, I couldn't agree more, because, I mean, we did this, I was 9, you were, like, 12, you were, like, 13, 14, right? Like, we did this when we were all, like, so young that we, like, didn't even realize, A, like, what it really was, like, what we were doing, being away from family, like, especially for me, like, it didn't really hit, like, that I was away from family until, like, you had an opening night, or you had the drama club, you had prom, you had soccer, track meet, states, football games, like wrestling matches, like all of these things. It didn't start to hit until like you guys were in high school. And then like you said, there was that time of questioning for me, at least, like, why are we out here? Like, why are we doing this? And like, why, like, what am I doing? Like, why am I away from my family? Like, just questioning everything. And then there's just a day that like it all switches and you're like, you understand. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if it's like I was too young, if it didn't think about it, if I don't know what it was.
I was going to say, like, you're a 9-year old.
No,
like,
no, exactly. Yeah. But like,
and then as you're growing up, like, you're beginning to realize, like, oh, wow. Like, there's a lot to process. You have no idea what's going on. Like, especially, you were Michael Banks. I mean, you were a 9-year-old playing Michael Banks.
Yeah, I mean, like, I didn't know, even know, like, it was a career or anything. Yeah, like, yeah, I didn't even know, like, I didn't even know I was making money, like, on Poppins. Like, really, like, I didn't know anything. And then, it, like you said, it wasn't until, like, Pippin where, like, I was backstage with my cast and they were like, can't believe this 11-year-old's on Broadway and blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm 30 and I'm making my Broadway debut. And, like, I still, like, didn't understand it. And then the curtain goes up and then you're like, holy cow. Like, this is, now I understand what they're talking about. And, like, I don't know. Like, a Broadway stage is much smaller than half the place that we went to on tour with Mary Poppins and A Christmas Story, Madison Square Garden. But, like, you I don't know, there's just a day that like it switches and you're like, oh, I like understand what I'm doing and why I'm here.
No, I like, I honestly, like, I'll never forget, it's my first time seeing you as like Michael Banks or anything, but I really like them. What's something I will never forget is watching you the first time in Pippin. Like, you weren't even acting, like, you just looked genuinely, not saying like you weren't in Mary Poppins, but like, you know, you could put on that prim and proper like Michael Banks, but like Pippin, you were like so happy. Every time you looked at somebody, like, it was just smiles and they were winking at you, and you can just tell like you were just a genuine innocent like 11-year-old just having the time of his life up there balancing on a big like 5-foot ball.
Yeah, and I just want to like touch on the, I don't know, it made me think about it when it was like your brother and dad gone, and also like going to see your brother and these things and everything. Something that like has always blown my mind, and I understand that it's an aspect of people's life, but just like, I remember in middle school, high school, just multiple times, and I remember the first time somebody came to me and was like, how do you feel about your brother? Like, are you jealous? Like, don't you wish you could be doing that thing, like doing those things and like going and whatever? And I was just like, that was just so never, like, that had never even crossed my mind, because like, I don't know, just like each of our lives have just always been like, that's their thing, yeah, and that's who they are. And if the opportunities and what comes out of it is them, and I'm so happy for them and whatever, like I don't think any of us have ever been like, oh, screw you because you're doing this and I would rather be doing that and blah, 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 and all of that. It was just always like, holy crap. Like, I was just there for the ride and I knew that what was going to come from it and being up here. And I'm just so happy that all of it happened so that we can each now have different opportunities and different fields of work and do whatever we love and want to do. And yeah, that was never in my head of like, oh, screw Eli because he's performing in front of thousands of people nightly and all this stuff. And I was just like, who says that kind of thing? Like, but it's an aspect that people have in their life and jealousy is very real, but I don't know. I would just never let anybody get you down type of thing.
Well, I mean, the people who are probably asking that are the ones that are, because honestly, people, something interesting that like when I was making my senior capstone was like, I remember people either talking about you and asking those types of questions. Like, I would never, like, I agree with everything you just said. I would never feel that way. I feel like they were the ones that felt that way because they were too nervous to be like, oh, I like theater. Right. Oh, I want to do that. Because, like, it's so, like, rare to find that. Like, no one admits that they like theater and want to go see a Broadway show because that's looked at as, like, are you a weirdo or something?
People
like,
do admit that. People in West Virginia don't.
Sorry. I need to be more specific on that.
Right. And, yeah, I mean, that just goes with the uneducatedness and uncultured of theater and arts and everything. Yeah, underexposure for sure. So let's talk about now that we're all, that we all became like a little older and we're kind of into this, you know, we're into this career more and everything. We kind of got a handle on things. And now you guys are like old enough to like start helping out in like with my career and like not like not as just like minions. Being no not minions. no that's not what I mean.
I didn't even want to do this.
Yeah, we're getting
first of all so yeah, but you guys are all like, you guys are all helping me out and like you guys are the reasons that like we're able to do this Take a Bow, the auditions that we do, especially in this virtual world that we're living in. Zach and Tessie have both been on set with me. I wouldn't have been able to take some TV jobs because my parents weren't available, so one of them had to like come on to that. So Tessie, we'll turn it to you first on like doing like auditions and self-tapes and like what you do with
editing,
Take a Bow, and editing. Yeah, like and then Zach, you could talk about like the on-set excursions. Yeah. Usually when he
sidelines with your pom-poms.
Well, usually when he comes to set, it's to like the TV shows and like the movies that he like really wants to meet the people at.
It's been 8-9 years, and I still can't stay calm and not fangirl when I see famous people that I've adored for years. But sorry,
there's nothing wrong with that.
God, the only time I cried, I'll never forget, is Reeve Carney.
Oh my god. Okay, so T, you go first.
Self-tapes. I don't know how to answer like that though.
Like, just like maybe, how like
that's really broad.
Yeah. But like what the like how it's what helped you in your field as far as like watching me do it and like you kind of like direct me and it's helped you in that way. It's helped you with editing and it's made you learn things and then you realize that you like it and maybe want to do a career in that and all that.
Well, yeah, I mean, my number one passion is video and film. And the reason I got into that was because I would just document when we were back in West Virginia, I would document moments or memories. And it's like encapsulating those in freezing time and grabbing them and storing them somewhere. Because the moments we experienced on tour, or that they experienced on tour and when they would come to Pittsburgh or come back home and everything, like I would capture those moments with either my camera or I don't know if you guys remember a flip camera because that's all I use.
The OG.
A lot of the times I'd be like, guys, remember this moment? And I would verbally say, and they'd be like, no, that never happened. What are you talking about? And I would bring it up on a camera and I would show them this little video that I made.
And we'd be in tears.
Then they'd be in tears and be like, oh my God, I can't believe I forgot about that. So that's why my number one passion is documentary filmmaking, because it brings those raw moments out again, and you talk about your memories, and you talk about, you know, so that in editing is like magic to me. And you have helped me open doors, like you said, in directing, because your self-tapes, there's like scenes and, oh my God, need to read the
stage
directions, because that helps formulate the scene.
Yes, anyone who's auditioning, read the stage directions.
Read the stage directions.
They'll, a thousand times.
They will help. They will help.
Because when he wasn't reading the stage directions, it was, I mean, yes, you're a talented being and everything. Like, thank you for being talented and, you know how to say your lines. But just the stage directions and, you know, the furrowed brow, and you're supposed to be questioning something, like he's confused, like that makes it 10 times. Like after taking my, I went to Marymount Manhattan College. I majored in film and media studies, and stage directions matter. Definitely.
They're there for a reason.
They're there for a reason. They're not for you to glance over.
Right.
Somebody is literally like taking these details and putting them in there for a reason. But yeah, you've helped me in that manner of directing, because before I would help you with self-tapes or anything like that, I like to really just sit in the background and be like, you tell me what to do, you tell me how you want this, and I will put it together for you, and I will edit, give me a little bit of creative space. That's also important too, is give your editor, a lot of people don't talk about editing, which is crazy to me. A lot of people don't enjoy it the way I do. But give your editor and give your team like that creative space, because if you have your idea and they have their own idea and you like combine that, it just makes your project 10 times better. So yeah, you've opened a lot of doors in the direct pre-production, especially pre-production realm, that have helped me in my internship, where I have been offered to help script a show for one of the shows on Travel Channel.
And I mean, not so much like me like helping you, but it's more of just like being in this environment and doing it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Just like along, like throughout the process of like seeing that there's even, because you come to Broadway and I don't even realize what Broadway is, let alone that there's 10, 20 different avenues behind Broadway and how Broadway runs and the agent process. Process. And just like, I mean, there's so many avenues that you can go down with that. And that's definitely opened my eyes and made me like, oh, like I knew that I didn't want to be Eli acting, doing that type of thing, but I wanted to be a part of it in some way. And that's definitely opened my eyes to like, oh, maybe I do want to go into talent management, talent agency type work. Or even casting part of it. I know you were, we were talking about that yesterday and everything.
You've also noticed how like pivotal social media is. Yeah, and
yeah, and along the way, like it's definitely helped me in like seeing like the social media side of it. And I've done different internships since I've been at college and with different companies and trying to grow their social media brand and everything, and in marketing. And it's so, there's so many, like I said, so many different avenues that you could go and explore that you never even dreamed were real until this happened.
Yeah, and it's similar to like my experience in like, oh, I've always loved seeing Tessie on stage and like loved that live music and everything aspect of performing and everything. And so that kind of inspired me. And then I feel like kind of since this has like taken off, we've now been in an environment of, you see how important that those roles are in casting and in social media and in directing and in editing, that we're like, we really get to see the impact that it has, mm-hmm. you know, being closer to it. And I think that you've always loved movies and you've loved books and you love all kinds of entertainment, including social media. Mm-hmm. And so like being in this environment and whatnot, and even in, especially in New York, it's kind of opened all of our eyes to all kinds of opportunities that we're now pursuing.
Yeah. And it definitely like with you being the, like, I don't want to say the face, but like you being the face, like, cause that's like the actor, the person in front of the camera, whether or show or whatever, Broadway, you now being like the editing behind the scenes, all of that work. It was kind of like, okay, what can I bring to the table? What can I learn differently? And what can, to make this kind of like work smoother or work better, that we could like work as a team and try to do type of thing to, I don't know, then take it to a next place of whatever that may be, and just understand the, not the aspects that you don't, that you two don't understand. Like, like, I don't know what you two do. And
that's not like what we are pursuing. Like, we have our goals and plan, like a to-do list on other things, you know, like we're not worried about that
bubble that we're in. But one thing I want to say, like, I think it's super interesting. Like, we're a rare kind of sibling pack that everybody that I've met, it's either actor, 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 production, production, production. Like, we are completely different, interested
fields,
in, like, different things, which is so cool to me. Like, you are, I mean, I'd say, like, you're the face. You're the, you know, promotion side. And I'm, like,
the communication.
Figuring it,
Figuring out every, basically, like, pre-production and distribution. And...
Sure, whatever that means.
You got it.
And, like, yeah, I like to put the puzzle pieces at the end together and do that editing kind of space. I think it's, I've always been very infatuated by that.
Yeah, and I think, too, like, now with this Take a Bow journey that we're embarking on through the quarantine and everything, it's allowed us to really, like, see that come to fruition and me being, like, the voice or the quote unquote face or whatever, and then you being the editor and like the director and kind of all that kind of thing, producer, whatever, and then you with the social media and the having a plan. You like brought all of the, you know, emails and advertising and like all those ideas to the table and like the big picture and everything like that. Like, so it's really been cool to see how each of their fields work kind of closer up, I guess, because otherwise, like, we just go on and do our own things in our room, you know, like, and figure it out on our own.
Yeah, because it's like a little company. Not that it's like, not that it's a company, but like, it's like a little thing that you got to keep going.
No, but I think it is important to have a team, and like, just anyone listening to anybody, everyone has ideas. Everyone has ideas that you can use, really.
Yeah,
and
the person that like knows absolutely nothing could one day come up with an idea that you never even thought of, just because it's a completely different set of eyes on it and different mind thinking about it. So
exactly,
I mean, not take advice, but I like to take things from everybody and see. I tell them all the time, throw 100 things at the wall until one thing sticks, and because you never know what that one thing's going to be, and it might be the last thing you thought was going to stick, but.
Yeah, I mean, like, mom's a occupational therapist, and she came up with Take a Bow. Like, no one, we went through thousands of names, and, like, the one who, like, knows nothing about theater was the one who, like, kind of tied it all together, you know? And then same with Dad, with all the ideas that he's brought on, and he's, like, doesn't know half the people that we've had on the show.
Yeah, and wanting merch. And
yeah, and then doing the merch idea and all of these things. Like, it's just, like, it's really taken everyone. So literally listen to everyone. And if there really isn't a bad idea, and it's something that you can always revisit if the time isn't right.
Yeah, and that's not saying run with anything anybody says to you, but, like...
No, but you have to listen and you have to adapt and you have to change.
Take it and be open.
Yeah, exactly. Have an open mind in anything that you do, in any field, in any business that you're starting, like, whatever. Like,
real quick, real big shout out to PJ and Jane Kokesh.
Yeah.
Thank you for everything.
Without them,
we would not be here.
Yes, we would not be here. Literally. And also, like, for just what they've done for the past 9 years and just
the sacrifices and just continuing to push us.
Like, I say that support. You two had the final decision, but at the end of the day, it was really the two of them who was like, are we really going to split up? Are we really going to give up our jobs and our lives and everything? Like, and they've done it all for us and for me and to really pursue it all. And I think that fortunately it's worked out for all of us in return. So
done a hell of a job.
Yeah.
We should do this again one time.
Yeah. So that's where we'll leave it for this episode. That's episode 58 of Take a Bow. And
Chris Letang.
Yeah, Chris Letang. It was a perfect one to it was a perfect one to do, a perfect number to do this episode on. And that's it.
That's
first live interview is in the books of Take a Bow.
That I think just was summed up the whole interview, though. Like, episode 58, take a bow, hockey.
Yeah.
That sums up everything right here.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you, guys. Thank you, PJ and Jen. Thank you to our
Mom
entire family. Bubba, Jaju, Mimi, Papa, literally everyone. Lou Grummet. We'll see you all next week.
John Canning.
John Canning, of course. John Canning's a huge factor in why we're still here and doing what we love and always supporting us in the podcast and everything.
Yeah, we've met so many amazing people along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been really fortunate. All right. Thanks, everyone. I don't know. Take a bow, Togas family. Well, folks, there you have it. Episode 58, long overdue, with my siblings talking all things about really Eli's entertainment experience. So we won't do that segment this week. We'll bring it back another week sometime soon, because I know we haven't had it in a minute. So that wraps it up for this week's episode. Thank you all for tuning in. I do want to mention before we wrap it up, Tally Sessions, who is a Broadway star. He's going to be in the revival of Company that is opening, yes, with Christopher Sieber and everything that we were talking about there. He's in that company. yes, he's in that cast of Company. Well, it's Company as well. So he's going to be in Company, and he's been in a bunch of other Broadway shows, and his mother just recently passed away from cancer, and he's set up a GoFundMe page to help support his family in paying off the medical bills, as well as her house and keeping it, and a bunch of other things. So if you do have time and if you are able to, please go check that out and go donate to his GoFundMe. I will leave the link in this podcast description of the episode. So if you're on Apple Podcasts, if you're listening on Spotify, whatever, and you see where you go to listen to the podcast, if you say like read more or details or something like that, you can see the link in that, or you can go visit Tally Sessions' Instagram. And hopefully we'll have him on soon and he can talk about all of this, because he was also a very big supporter in the Nick Cordero fight for his life. So Tally is an amazing man, an amazing gift of Broadway. And if you are able to help, please consider doing so, because every little bit goes a long way. And I know that he would be so, so thankful. So go check that out, and I hope to see you all next week. Bye, everyone. For this episode's Curtain Call, I would like to recognize a few people who also deserve to take a bow. This podcast would not be possible without the help from Dory Berenstein, Brittany Bigelow, Katie Rosen, Alan Seals, and the team at the Broadway Podcast Network. Next in line to take a bow is Tessie Tokash, who edits the audio and all the visuals for this podcast. A special thanks to patrons Brian Thompson, Pat McNamara, the listeners at PCC, as well as all of the other patrons for their continued support. If you're interested in becoming a patron, go to patreon.com/TAB. And if you enjoyed this week's episode, don't forget to subscribe on the platform that you're currently listening to this on. Also, feel free to give us a follow on Instagram at Take a Bow Podcast. Take a Bow's logo is designed by Giselle Bustos, and the music is by Nikki Torsha and Cormac Collinon. Bye, everyone. Hope to see you next week.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah,
not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.